This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge, and for Frank Stasio. In 1997, the University of North Carolina football star Ryan Hoffman was the epitome of an offensive lineman. The 6'5", 287-pound left tackle was an Ironman. His dream was to play in the NFL. That never happened. Instead, almost 20 years later, Hoffman is homeless, living on the street, and suffering with what he and his family assume is traumatic brain damage from years of play on the field. New York Times sports journalist Juliet McCurr, at the request of Hoffman's family, recently tracked down the former UNC standout and wrote a column about Hoffman, which has garnered a lot of attention from sports fans, former teammates, coaches, and even his alma mater. Juliet McCurr joins us now to talk about her feature. Welcome, Juliet.
Thank you.
So your first column about Ryan Hoffman begins with you finally tracking him down. How did you learn about him and his predicament?
Well, his sister had reached out to us initially asking us if we could possibly find her brother or help her brother get some assistance based on all the stories that the New York Times had written about the NFL players who have had a traumatic brain injury or have had problems after they finished playing football because of all the repeated hits to the head. So she reached out initially, and that's when I started looking for Ryan.
When his family reached out, had they described Ryan's deterioration? What did they say was going on with him?
Well, initially they said that he was homeless, that he was probably abusing drugs, that he might have a mental illness, and they really weren't quite sure what those problems were. And they did mention that it could have been because of the head injuries he sustained playing football. But the thing is, they didn't know, and really nobody can know, because this brain disease that comes upon us after you have all these repeated hits to the head, that can't be determined until somebody has passed away. So it was a big question for them, and it's also a big question for Ryan once I found him.
And what condition did you find him in?
Well, yeah, it was correct. He was homeless. I found him panhandling on a corner of an intersection in Lakeland, Florida, which is in between Tampa and Orlando. He had admitted that he had been abusing drugs, that he was using alcohol to soothe him because he had mood disorders, mood swings. It sort of evened him out. He said that he was living in abandoned buildings, and we tracked him down when he was sleeping on a porch of a shuttered business with his girlfriend and a friend that he had met on the street. So it was pretty dire circumstances that he was in, and he said he wanted help. He couldn't figure out what his problem was. He suspected football, but wasn't sure. He said he needed somebody to sort of move him in the right direction.
And you saw some of these memory issues playing out in front of you.
Right. His sister said that he had memory loss, which is why it was so difficult for me to contact him initially, because he kept losing his cell phone, kept forgetting where his cell phone was, losing the charger, leaving his charger somewhere. And so, I've probably called 5 or 6 different phone numbers, because he would always get a new cell phone the next day after losing the one that he had had, which, you know, the new one had a new phone number. So it's hard to track down somebody like that. But we the photographer and I took him and his girlfriend to lunch. We had this long lunch. We did an interview, our first interview at lunch. And then several hours after that, I asked him if he was hungry. And he said, yeah, no, I'm not hungry. I just had this great lunch at this great seafood place that you should try it, which is the one we just came back from a couple hours before. So that was my first glimpse of his short-term memory loss.
In 2015, the topic of brain damage due to repeated blow to the head, it isn't really news. We've heard this before. But most of the attention has gone to the pros, to the NFL. You've had more people reach out to you with similar stories about college problems, right?
Right. I mean, that's what makes this story unique, because last year, right before the Super Bowl, I wrote a story about Rayfield Wright, who is a Hall of Famer, played for the Dallas Cowboys for many years, and I wrote a story about his struggle with dementia, early onset dementia. When I wrote that story, I received maybe more than a dozen emails from people all over the country who said, wow, I can really empathize with Rayfield Wright, because I have these problems too. And I didn't play in the NFL. I was actually a college player, which made me start thinking, wow, you know, we don't hear from these college players because they don't have a union. They're not looking at this huge $765 million settlement that the NFL is set to pay to pay these players with head injuries. So these are the people who are suffering in silence, maybe too embarrassed to come forward. They don't have a union to speak for them. So this is a story that I was looking into and interested in writing for a long time.
Is there anybody who is looking out for these college players? As you say, there is no union. There is no really compensation. Who is advocating?
Well, there is a union that recently formed for college athletes, but right now this is just the beginning of all this. As you know, there are a lot of lawsuits and a lot of debate on how much universities and the NCAA owes these players who play for a university for four or five years, and do they owe a medical benefits afterwards, or should they pay them during their college years? I mean, that's the big question. But right now, that's not going to help Ryan Hoffman any, or all these people who might be in his position, maybe not homeless, but maybe suffering with memory loss or headaches or these things that have been caused by repeated hits to the head, or perhaps have been caused by repeated hits to the head, because as we know, the brain disease can't be diagnosed until post-mortem. So I'm not sure how many people there are out there suffering, but I've received maybe more than 200 or 300 emails from people who are empathizing with Ryan Hoffman.
One of the things that comes through in the article is, yes, the struggles that Ryan Hoffman is going through trying to keep himself alive on the streets, but also this rather dutiful nature that's kind of reminiscent of the guy maybe that always showed up to play, that he's still trying to take care of people and be there, right?
Right. I mean, it's not like when I spoke to him, he was I could understand what he was saying. He made sense a lot of the time. You know, he had a girlfriend and this 22-year-old kid who he was watching out for, and he made it his duty every night to find that himself and them a place to stay, which is not easy when you're homeless. I mean, that abandoned building you might have slept in last night might be filled with other homeless people, or might have been shuttered, or the police are now looking out for homeless people entering illegally. So he made it his duty to help out these people, and I guess he said he really doesn't have anything else to look forward to in life. He has to watch out for himself and watch out for these two people that have sort of he has taken under his wing, and everything else in life has fallen apart for him.
I'm speaking with New York Times reporter Juliet McCurr today on The State of Things. You spoke to Ryan's former coaches, including Mack Brown, about this whole ordeal. Did they seem to remember signs of trauma or history of concussions with Ryan Hoffman?
No, none of them did. And that's the thing. Back then, there weren't the concussion protocols in place that there are today. Back then, it was, you know, not only in college football, but high school football and the NFL. You know, when you got a concussion, it was like you got your bell rung and you just kind of went back onto the field. So things were much different back then. But as Mack Brown pointed out, which is true, a lot of these players wouldn't even admit to having a headache or feeling like they had a concussion. Maybe they were seeing stars or stumbling off the field, but they would say, "I'm okay, coach. I don't want to lose my starting spot. Just put me back in. I'm fine." So that's the problem with these concussions, is the players don't self-report or very rarely self-report because they're afraid of losing their starting spot.
Since your column was published, many people have tried to reach out to Ryan, including old teammates and UNC. Have you had a chance to speak with Ryan, and does he seem receptive to this type of help?
Initially, he didn't seem receptive to it, but I think that it's way too early to find out how he's going to handle all of this. I mean, somebody with 20 years of substance abuse and 20 years of a possible mental illness and recently homeless, it's difficult to just realize that all these people are reaching out to you at once, driving the streets of Lakeland, Florida to try to find you, or calling you on your cell phone after not talking to you for 20 years. I mean, some of his former teammates had done that, but I think it's really overwhelming for him. I'm not sure what the first step will be, but UNC has offered to come and get him tested at their Center for Retired Athletes. I'm not sure how that'll help him in his lifelong plan, but a lot of other organizations have reached out to give him free rehab, which he definitely needs. And so I'm not sure what the next step is for Ryan or if he can take it very quickly, but his family hopes that he's able to do it eventually.
Do you think that this increased attention of potential head injuries for, we know about NFL, but now college football players as well, will have an effect on how people start consuming football or college football? Has it already?
I think it has. I think that football, well, I know that football is the biggest sport in the country, and a lot of people tend to tune out when they hear these kind of stories and say, I'm going to still watch on Sunday, even though I feel bad for these players. It's not like they're stopping. They're going to give in their season tickets to UNC just about yet. But I think that the more and more we write about it, the more players who come forward or who are addressing the issue make it more clear that football is not exactly a safe sport, even though many people claimed, including the NFL, for many years that it was safe and that there was no such thing as repetitive head injuries causing long-term damage. We know that that's not true now.
Juliet McCurr is a sports reporter for the New York Times. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
You can visit our website, stateofthings.org, for links to both of her articles about former UNC football player Ryan Hoffman. Just ahead, we'll chat with women who are helping to fill in the blanks of history on the Internet's encyclopedia. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.